This is the Taylor Report, and it is CIUT, and it's 89.5 FM. The following interview was pre-recorded, and a reference is made in the interview to a demonstration in Ottawa, and that demonstration, of course, has already taken place. We hope you enjoy the interview. Our guest is Stephen Gowans, and he is the proprietor of What's Left, a very important publication. And Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Phil.
It's striking. I think you really we couldn't be more timely for two reasons. One, you've written a really important piece analyzing what is going on here in the, so we haven't agreed on all the language, but the, well, actually your title gets it. The occupation of Ottawa is a far right assault on labor and democracy. And I want to remind our listeners, you actually live in Ottawa. We can out you with that. You and so you've seen some. Talk about your thesis, and if you want to add in anything you might have observed, we'd all appreciate that, because the leaders of this, I call them the owner-operator group, are saying everybody should come in and see us. So you're one of the authors who actually seen them. So why do you call it a far-right assault on labor and democracy?
Now, I should point out, not only do I live in Ottawa, but I live right in the middle of the occupation. I'm one of the people who had to experience the incessant honking and the diesel fumes. But there's some kind of really strange insanity that's gripped a number of people who somehow think that this occupation is a left-wing pro-working class phenomenon. And that anyone has to point out that it isn't, and that it's, in fact, the antithesis of that is just mind-boggling. Mind-boggling, and when we just look at who it is that supports this so-called movement, I mean, just from in Canada, well, who supports it? There's the lunatic far-right People's Party. I mean, it's four square behind the occupation, as are, you know, the interim leader and likely future leader of the country's Conservative Party. Mm-hmm. And so when have, you know, anti-union, pro-business, social conservative parties ever embraced an authentic pro-labor left-wing movement? And yet there's a whole bunch of deluded people who think that this is some kind of expression of democracy, some grassroots working class movement. There's the issue of the police. The Ottawa police have done nothing to liberate the city. And if you live where I live, people around here feel completely abandoned by the police, abandoned by all levels of government, none of whom are prepared to do anything. And, you know, the Ottawa police have done nothing to liberate the city. Instead, they prefer to avoid confrontation, and they hobnob with the occupiers or avoid them altogether. I go out for walks every day, and one of the places I walk is Spark Street, which is a pedestrian mall. But Spark Street is right in the middle of the so-called red zone. And if you walk down there, as I did one night, you'll encounter none of these occupiers. They're in all the other streets, but they don't go on Spark Street, the pedestrian mall. And this particular night, as I walked down the street all by myself, I did encounter some other people, about 20 police officers, all standing around having a fine chat. One block away from any of the occupiers they were supposed to be keeping an eye on. The city of Ottawa complains that it's spending an additional $800,000 a day on policing. $800,000 a day for police officers.
For what?
Spark Street Mall. So, pardon me?
I said for zilch, for nothing, from the point of view of the people.
Accomplishes nothing. And the city's chief of police, Peter Slowly, is an endless source of excuses for why he and his officers cannot act. I mean, early on, he declared that there may be no policing solution. And he's kept his word. He's implemented no solution. He's come up with no solution. And the chief's inaction has led to calls for his resignation, from a real grassroots calls for his resignation by people in the city who feel completely abandoned by their police force. So, well, you know, what genuine left-wing pro-worker movement has ever had police as a complicit or as a complicit party?
Yes. That is something that actually, I'm glad you raised a good time to talk about it in my mind. I'm watching a kind of a shift in the profile of the people who are the, I call them the owner operators. They're not Teamsters. They're not wage slaves. These guys are truck owners, and some of them have companies. One of the companies is run by a man named Evans. He says the next time he comes to Ottawa, they're going to be guns, unless he's free from being vaccinated. But we're starting to see in their spokespersons, instead of the original kind of bearded and overweight group, we're seeing smoothies with military background. And one of them was asked last night, and he seems to be the principal man now. I call him Tom the Explainer. And he was asked, well, who is supporting you? Because he says Canadians. And they said, well, who? And he says, the professions, military, police, lawyers, and doctors. That was his list. He didn't mention labor, by the way. You would be surprised to know, Stephen. He did not mention the anti-imperialist left wasn't in the group. No union was mentioned. And one of the people who's in his core group is a year and a half ago, was a member of the prime minister's security team. You know, I would say it's time for a few alarm bells to ring. By the way, I may as well, I'll just toss in another generalization here for you to work on. This is the Americans who always object to the slightest instance of anybody meddling in their affairs. Americans are all over this thing. Could you talk about that?
They are all over it. And this seems to be sparking Me Too movements around the world. I mean, in other countries that have not got to the point where they say that they're going to adopt a living with COVID strategy. The Wall Street Journal had an interesting, or perhaps alarming, editorial 2 days ago in which they talked about what they called the Canada's trucker protest. I mean, the Wall Street Journal endorses this as well. And you know, what was the last left-wing pro-labor movement that the Wall Street Journal ever endorsed? But why did they endorse this occupation? Well, they say because it's time for the pandemic emergency orders to end. Yeah. They want to return to business normal, where profit making is not interfered with in any way by any kinds of restrictions designed to protect the public. And then we have other, some other U.S. involvement. You have, who are the supporters? Elon Musk, Donald Trump.
Trump Jr.
Other, you know, members of the hard right Republican faction of the U.S. ruling class. Mm-hmm. These are the people who are for this movement. And so, as I said, it's completely mind-boggling that anyone should think that this is some grassroots pro-democracy, pro-labor movement. And the fact the fact that anyone has to write about this or disabuse anyone of this suggests that there's a large part of this community that is in the grips of complete insanity.
Yeah. I wonder, you point out, and by the way, it is kind of news. You know, last weekend, and we're going to have another weekend show, you can see it coming. But there were some union people began to turn out in Toronto, particularly healthcare people. But in your column in What's Left, and this is Stephen Cowan, you mentioned that there's going to be a demonstration by union people in Ottawa. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, and there will be, because someone has to do it, because no one else is doing it. There will be a coalition of local labor unions. Actually, this has been put together by largely by Public Service Alliance of Canada, the coalition of local labor unions, community organizations, activists, and residents, because the residents of Ottawa are highly engaged in this, will hold a rally this Saturday in solidarity with frontline workers. There are a lot of workers who can't go to their jobs. Yeah. Because stores are closed in this area, because it's too dangerous to open them.
Yes.
And other Ottawa residents affected by the occupation, people who are living with noise, with a bunch of thugs who are out on the streets, engaged in all kinds of illegal activity, which the police turn a blind eye to. So we'll be having a rally, and the rally will call for an end of the occupation. And the vast majority of people who live in this city want the occupation to end. Mm-hmm. It'll call for support for frontline workers, for people who can't work and aren't making any money because of this occupation. It'll be a call or say no to white supremacy, to misogyny, to homophobia, to transphobia, and to all the other forms of hate that the convoy is directed at residents. You know, when you go down to Parliament Hill on Canada Day, the bulk of the people there are people of color these days. You go down to Parliament Hill today, you'll be hard. When I've been down there, I haven't seen one person of color amongst this group. So we'll also be calling for public health measures that protect our communities and for immediate support for workers who have lost income due to the convoy. Be calling for 14 paid sick days for all workers, for decent pandemic pay, for an end to the crisis in long-term care, and strong public health care system.
Yeah. I want to make sure we say, your article, by the way, has a long quote you cite, the Teamsters Union. And I was struck by the facts that, and it's corroborated by this author, Adam King, that the trucking industry, due to deregulation, started back with Carter and Reagan, has gone from an industry which was where the over-the-road drivers were members of unions. Now they're owner-operators. And this is another breed of cat, as they say. And as Adam King's article points out, he calls them the petty bourgeoisie because they are, they own a truck and that's how they make their money. And they are not in unions and they're not sympathetic to unions. As a matter of fact, they had two or three years ago, they were opposing or favoring the pipeline, I guess it was their stance, but they ended up confronting unionists. I echo your point. How in the world do so sophisticated observers think that these guys represent anything except perhaps scabbing? And we should also point out, historically, this class is a very dangerous class of people. The owner-operator types are very unstable politically and have been bad apples in history.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, and you're right. I mean, the trucking industry is opposed to this. The Teamsters are opposed to this. In fact, the Teamsters say the greatest danger to truckers is COVID-19. And the majority of truckers are also opposed. Another lie or misconception that has been spread is that somehow this is what Canadians want. But in fact, a majority of Canadians and a majority of Americans support COVID-19 restrictions. They don't support this call to lift all restrictions. And the majority of people in Ontario, not in Ontario, in Ottawa, are vehemently opposed to this. This is not grassroots. This is not pro-democratic. This isn't supported by anyone except for this very narrow group of reactionary, homophobic.
But when we first, when we understood how serious COVID was, a couple of the moments that really galvanized the country was out west in the meatpacking plants, where the workers were Black and immigrant, and they had very high casualty rates. It was organized labor and others said, you got to save these people because they're in the clutches of bosses who didn't want to give them, didn't want them working at a space, didn't want to have masks, didn't want any restrictions. It was a battle to protect those workers.
It was, and they borne the brunt of this pandemic, and they have been differentially affected or affected disproportionately. What does Elon Musk doesn't care, nor Donald Trump,
nor the guy who can't keep his satellites up.
Yes.
Another element of this that worries me is that, in a way, it's a kind of a strange show because they're pushing against an open door. Biden and other Western leaders, certainly Johnson, they've been saying, oh, don't worry, by spring, it's going to be the old Trump idea. When spring comes, everything's going to be fine. And so for this weird and extreme show by this group is, to me, a bit farcical, since the whole pattern of Western leadership is to open up, frankly, with no, what I would say, no medical or scientific basis to do it. They're using this expression, we'll have to live with it. How do you live with it? I mean, explain that to me. By the way, I'm leaving out China, who had decided they're not going to live with it.
Yeah, it's the living with COVID strategy, but it's more aptly dubbed dying with COVID. But here's the problem. I mean, there's been this movement to lift all emergency restrictions or emergency measures, all restrictions, because it interferes with the digestion of profits. But there's still some countries, some jurisdictions, which are practicing mitigation to some extent. I mean, that's true in Canada, in most places, although there's some provinces that are about to practice or transition to the living with COVID strategy. But there is still this effort afoot to push the countries that are holding out, Canada among them, to move from their mitigation strategy to their living to a living with COVID strategy. And that's what the Wall Street Journal has been talking about. The United States is certainly moving in that direction. Today, I think it was in the New York Times, there was a discussion about conversations that are going on within the Biden administration about moving in that direction. You know, at a time when hospitalizations and death rates are extraordinarily high in the United States, extraordinarily high too in Canada. And yet, you know, we talk as if the pandemic is about to end and that it's safe to lift all of these measures.
Aren't they going back to the Trump idea? Don't count them and there won't be any problem.
Yeah, exactly. Don't count them, but still have to count the deaths.
The dead ones you have to count. That's the hard part. But they used to do that with indigenous people, so they should know how to hide.
But the encouraging and heartening thing is that most people still support these restrictions. Most people recognize that these restrictions are important, and most people are opposed to lifting restrictions. Mm-hmm. So it's that kind of, you know, majority opposition to endangering public health that this kind of movement is trying to overcome.
Mm-hmm. We've spoken of it in the past, but I think we should underline this point that the IMF president told China that it's going to have to learn to live with it. Now that's here, these guys, that's the drumbeat here, right? our premiers, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, just live with it. And telling China they have to.
And they really don't have any kind of compelling argument for why that should be the case. It's interesting to read some of the press reports, New York Times, Wall Street Journal. They occasionally frequently talk about this. But yes, China is going to have to learn to live with COVID. But at the same time, they acknowledge that China's done an extraordinary job in protecting its citizens and that its citizens support its approach. China has also said, we're not moving away from this approach, and nor should it. I mean, there's no argument for why they ought to. There's nothing to be gained.
By the way, they're the ones who are free of COVID. They're not locked down. They attack it when they see it, they isolate it and eliminate it.
Precisely. The Lancet, the British medical journal, The Lancet, the prestigious journal, had done a study. This one didn't look at China, but it looked at OECD countries, and it compared a few OECD countries that were pursuing the same kind of approach that China did with the rest of the countries. And what that Lancet study found was that those that emulated China not only did a much better job in saving lives, but they recovered faster economically. They were able to open their economies safely and much more quickly. And they had what the authors called better civil rights, by which they meant that there were fewer restrictions, because what they did was they decisively addressed the issue immediately. They imposed decisive, clear, and effective public health measures, and they were able then to quickly lift those measures and allow people to safely get back to work, which is exactly what China did.
Yes. And it has to be said boldly, a socialist system, they've shown in Cuba and Vietnam has done it as well, North Korea. It does a better job. Here you have a capitalist order, and we can have a premier say, I'm going to do this. And another premier says, I'm going to do that too. And the leader of the federal government says, well, I don't know. I mean, that is, that means you're beat before you start.
Yes.
By the way, you praise, and I like to shout out his name. I mean, Ben Norton has been taking on the American, what do you call these guys? The bloggers, I guess, but some rather celebrated, who have fallen in love with these right wingers who are occupying your city. But Ben Norton made some nice points. He said he saw this in Brazil. Did you notice that? What he said about happened in Brazil?
Not Brazil specifically.
He said that. That they hired truckers there actually, and just hired them and told them to go and support the president and demand no vaccinations.
Ah, okay.
So, but he's made the point in the face of a lot of criticism. I certainly like the way he's argued it.
Yes, and in some respects, he's put many of us in Ottawa to shame. Here's Ben Norton, a man who doesn't live in Ottawa, but lives in Nicaragua, is probably doing more work to challenge the stupidity around this and point out what's really going on.
I suspect he's been reading Stephen Gowans myself, but he did note that the Teamsters and the Canadian Labour Congress, they're on record. This is clear. They say, we want to protect our members. That's our job. We want them to be healthy. And I don't know how to characterize them, but these pundits in the U.S., they're just starry-eyed. Perhaps they're bored. Is that it? The American, those who have radical reputations, they seem to be anxious for a fire to start anywhere because they don't do much themselves.
Yeah, and I've also found that, there's this tendency to look at movements and not look at the content of the movements and to look at their methods and to assume that if their methods somehow resembled the methods of left-wing movements previously, they must therefore be left-wing, without looking at the aim of the movement or the content of the movement. So it seemed to me there are lots of people in the US who've been observing this, lots of people who identify as being on the left who've been thinking, well, this must be some kind of left-wing movement because it involves politics in the street. Or, you know, these people are upset with the way in which the pandemic was handled, and they've also deluded themselves into thinking that there's popular support for the kinds of measures that the occupiers have been putting forth. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there is very little public support for any of the measures these people.
Your column is, of course, What's Left. And it strikes me that that subject isn't worked on enough. A socialist would look at it some kind of an occurrence wherever it be in the world, and they would say, what are the demands of those guys? What is it they want? And there's nothing here about wages. There's nothing about the right to organize. There's nothing about solidarity with workers. Why wouldn't that be an immediate put off to anybody who was thinking about supporting them? If they say they don't want to be vaccinated, 80% of truckers are vaccinated. These guys don't want it, and I'm supposed to care?
Yeah. Well, on the ground, the way they appear is a bunch of people walking about with Canadian flags draped around their shoulders, shouting, freedom, freedom. And, you know, you look at the demands that were made by the organizers initially, they're completely incoherent, constitutionally impossible. And they've made some really silly, completely idiotic demands, like, one of them not too long ago was that they would, the organizers, that is, would form a coalition government with the Conservatives and the People's Party and even the NDP.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, well, they wanted a new constitution, a new order.
Yes, and appealing to the Governor General and the Senate, neither of which are elected.
And by the way, when they decided they no longer wanted to say that, because if their admirers abroad actually looked at that, they would realize that they're cuckoo. So then they said, well, we'll put that aside. So now you have to talk to us because we're not crazy anymore. Remember yesterday I was crazy? Today, my new demand is, I saw a press conference tonight with two military officers, retired. One of them with a row of medals on his chest, calling on the army to come over to the side of the occupiers. Retired military. What is this, blowback?
I believe this has also happened in France a few months ago.
Again, people need we should have a little battle on the left and say, people have to say programmatically who they are when they're going to use the word left, because you know, where I come from, that's supposed to mean socialist, but apparently it can mean anything anybody wants it to mean, and nobody has to say programmatically what they want. And here we have a situation where a socialist country defeated COVID. Capitalist countries totally made a schmozzle out of it with 900,000 dead. And we should say, so eliminate capitalism, right?
Yeah.
That would be my conclusion. I only have nothing to lose but my change. I mean, why not?
Well, another thing that strikes me is that many of the people who have, you know, acted as champions of the idea that this is a left-wing democratic movement who are somehow associated with the left or may perhaps allow people to believe they're part of the left. It struck me that I've never seen them self-identify as leftists, as Marxists or communists or socialists or even social democrats or even trade unionists. Mm-hmm. And it also strikes me that those people who self-identify as all of those things are vehemently opposed to this movement.
Yes.
Which is also revealing.
it is revealing, and you can see on which side of the fence all these folks are going to end up. Because that's one thing they haven't changed. They have had speakers there at that at their demonstrations, and anti-communism is a major theme.
Yes, it is.
They're not only the vanguard of the working class, but they're the vanguard of the anti-communist class. So it's very striking.
Yes.
But you're going to be with the people who need to strike. That's labor. They're going to be on Saturday, right? Ottawa.
On Saturday at 1 o'clock, okay. We'll be meeting at Lansdowne Park.
Well, I hope they have Stephen Gowan speak, and he has a great journal, a great name, What's Left, and it's time to read Stephen like never before. Hey, Stephen, thanks very, very much.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. And this is the Taylor Report, and we'll see you later.